Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Güter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's edition, we'll be discussing all of the action from match day 26. An important match day heading into the international break as teams on the bottom end of the spectrum are hoping to get themselves away from the relegation battle. Teams in the midfield are caught in the middle, as per you would expect. Some think there are a chance of gaining notoriety towards the promotional playoffs, but in truth, they're a lot closer to the relegation battle as a whole. And there are teams, of course, who are in the promotion hunt. One team in particular has made it very clear that their presence above is very much of the priority. And as things stand, they are heading in the right direction. To help me discuss all of the action from match day 26 is none other than CEO and freelance journalist from the Millanturn. It's Tim Eckstein. Tim, great to have you back on the podcast. And obviously, the timing is quite perfect as St. Pauli have a pretty comprehensive lead at the top of the table.
Yeah, feels good to be heading towards this national break or national game break now with this victory above Nuremberg. So it was quite nice.
I can imagine. And we'll start with that game as that's on the score sheet first. Nuremberg and St. Pauli, a very healthy more than 45,000 made their way to the Max Morlock Stadion to see pretty one-sided contest, truth be told. 2-0 the final score. Goal scorer is Johannes Eggestein, who scored his first goal since match day 12 in the Zweite Bundesliga. That was against Elversberg. And then Marcel Hartl is making a bit of a play to be the top scorer in the Zweite Bundesliga. He scored in 62 minutes for his 14th goal of the campaign. And they inch ever closer towards promotion and even the league title. We're talking off air that it's been 13 long years since St. Pauli have graced the top division, and on the weekend it was a pretty dominant performance against the Nuremberg side that really offered very little in attacking force.
Yeah, so it's 2-0 in the end, but it felt like it's 7-8-0. So St. Pauli was quite dominant this match, and Nuremberg, they had two shots. In total, this was the lowest number of shots taken since the statistics are made for them. So it was really, really a dominant performance of St. Pauli. And even though they struggled a lot, they had personal problems. Eric Smeed was missing. Oladapo Afolayan, he is also missing. And some other guys are also struggling with some virus in the team. And yeah, still St. Pauli was coming to the pitch and was playing this dominant with their variable, flexible play. It was really nice to see. And yes, of course, Johannes Eggestein, he scored again. But Fabian Hützler, the manager of St. Pauli, he always says, I don't count the goals of Johannes Eggestein. He's more important to me for the match itself. So for playing passes, be active, be a connector to the midfield. But it's nice to see him score again.
Yeah, absolutely. And the importance of his contribution structurally, as you spoke about, and there was a few match days ago where they went with a false nine with Hartl, and you could see that just sort of almost limited Hartl's creativity. You can see here quite comfortable with the way the team is going. And yeah, look, you know, they've had a bit of a bumpy road of recent with those losses to Schalke and Magdeburg, but this was, despite obviously the scoreline being only 2-0, it did feel like a bit more of a statement of we're back to playing the kind of football that we wanted to produce, and really put Nuremberg in really almost the fetal position, in the sense of they couldn't do anything. Like the chance that I remember was Benjamin Goller in the first half, and after that, you know, they were such a non-event, and just it was suffocating from St. Pauli. And that's, and as you mentioned, without Eric Smith, who's been out for quite a bit, that's definitely a positive considering he's such an important part of the team.
Yeah, and I mean the period of the match which have shown the best how dominant St. Pauli is. I mean, as a home game for Nuremberg, you are two goals behind. And of course, with the win, you can, how to say, climb a bit up to look for the relegation battle. But you're two behind, and St. Pauli was playing, I was counting it afterwards, between the 86th and 90th minute, they were playing 75 passes in a row without a Nürnberger getting the ball. I mean, this was so impressive on the one hand of St. Pauli, but Nürnberg gave up at this time. Even though there were like five with additional time, with extra time, 10 minutes to play, they already were giving themselves up. And this was really impressive and have shown how dominant St. Pauli was this match.
Absolutely. And I guess for Nürnberg, the worry is, and look, the points deficit is still 8 points to the relegation playoff spot. But, you know, we know things can change quite quickly. And this was a match day where the sort of gap between the bottom three, there are three, but really it's two, really closed the gap and has made things very interesting as we enter that final stretch of the season. Nürnberg have got Hertha on the way back from the break. That's a world feed game. That's their top, the 8:30 kickoff. St. Pauli have Paderborn. We'll talk about Paderborn at the end, midway through Group 2. Now let's talk about the team that is giving chase, the first respondent to St. Pauli. That's Holstein Kiel. They made the journey to Elversberg on Saturday afternoon, and same scoreline, 2-0. Shuto Machino scored his fourth goal of the campaign, and then just after the break, the soon-to-be departing, as reported, Philip Zander, who's looks like he's heading off to Borussia Mönchengladbach at the end of the season, his effort snuck through a nest of Elversberg players, and 2-0 was your final score. An important win for Kiel, given what happened below them. It keeps them at arm's length to the likes of Hamburg and Fortuna Düsseldorf. But in a game that seemed to be bereft of high quality chances, Kiel were just good enough to find a way and a breakthrough against a pretty strong Elversberg team.
Yes, Elversberg is also really impressive, and especially now because they have such a high number of people, players that are not able to play. I mean, it's how to say that in German you say das letzte Aufgebot, something like their last possible formation, something like this. And it's quite impressive how Elversberg is playing, even though you need to see. I mean, you're coming to this league from the third division, you're playing a good first half of the season, then it gets problematic. And usually something like, for American football, you call this some kind of a rookie wall that is coming. So in the first games, you are like full of euphoria because you were getting up, you were getting promoted. And then some kind of a wall hits you, and this usually leads to a phase where you're not playing such a good ball like Elversberg do. I mean, and this is impressive because they are playing so brave, I think. So even though they are a quite, how to say, small club, they are not the huge names in the squad, and they are playing such a brave football. I like it a lot to see Elversberg, and it's a pity that they lost. I was hoping for that they also can go into this promotion battle, just because they are Elversberg and not because I want to see them in the Bundesliga. But I think I always want to, how to say it, to feature this brave football they play. And this was impressive, and also against Holstein Kiel is also quite impressive. They also play this, how to say it, this brave football, and yeah, most probably they will go up after this season. But I like Elversberg a lot.
Yeah, I think that's what's made them such an interesting draw card in terms of, you know, what they can produce overall. And they've done it with a lot of younger players, guys who haven't had the experience to play in the Zweite Bundesliga before. If you look at like the current squad, I think there's three players off the top of my head who have Zweite Bundesliga experience. And, you know, a lot of the recruitment has also added around younger players, guys like Paul Varner from Bayern München, has been a really good find for them. Frederik Jäkel has, you know, before his injury, was having a much better season than he had last time out in the Zweite Bundesliga. But, you know, they still have some deficiencies, for which I think the way they play such brave football sort of masks the fact that they are missing a couple of pieces to the puzzle if they are to sort of press forward next season. But yeah, I think, look, the big story here is Kiel, though. That's you know, they've been a team that have really huffed and puffed and have come close on several occasions to gaining promotion. But with 8 games to go in the season, they have put themselves in a very good situation. And this is a team, if we're being honest, has had a lot of injuries throughout their campaign. And I know that comes with the territory for a lot of teams. But they've had a lot of pivotal players like your Steven Skrzybskis, Benedict Pickler's missed a good chunk of the season. Zander's missed a chunk of the season. But they've got such this admirable next man up mentality. And I think a great sort of like indicator of how good their depth is Nico Remberg, who he was so good in this game. Such a dominant figure alongside Lewis Holtby in that midfield. And it's probably not marvelled enough about how well Kiel have done over the last couple of years, especially this season, in rejigging a side that seemed to have no real direction to one that is edging closer to promotion.
Yeah, I mean, and Holstein Kiel, they also improved a lot over the course of the season. So when they have won after halftime, like after 17 games, then they were on the top. I always thought, okay, they are at the top, but they are not as good as a team that is at the top, right? And now they are playing, they improved a lot. They are playing even more intense football. In the game before the winter break against St. Pauli, they were like standing deep, waiting for the opponents, and then doing counter attacks a lot. And they were good at it, at this counter attacks. But now they improved in their own play, their build up play. They improved a lot there after the winter break. So, and this is quite impressive. I haven't expected this from Holstein Kiel. But maybe this is also because, as you said, because the important players are coming back now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it just brings a little bit more confidence in what they're doing. And yeah, look, you know, the run home, you know, as it's massive. And maybe this is the time they've had, you know, 3 really good cracks at promotion. And yeah, now we'll see if they can actually convert after many, many years in the Zweite Bundesliga. They've got Rostock on the way out of the international break. Elversberg have got a date with Eintracht Braunschweig. And lastly, let's head to the stadium under Bremer Brücke. Osnabrück hosted Fortuna Düsseldorf on Friday night. A massive game for both sides. Düsseldorf wanted to keep the pressure on Hamburg and really put themselves in a position of a top 3 spot. Osnabrück desperate to get back to winning ways. They knew that they could ill afford any more points lost, especially defeats. And unfortunately for them, it got out of hand rather quickly in the second half. But the man driving all of this was once again Christoph Solis. He opened the scoring on 35 minutes. He's got 15 goals of the season. And to top that off, he will be representing Greece during the international break as they aim to qualify for Euro 2024. 3 goals in the second half coming from substitute Takashi Achino. Marlon Mustafa, who was given the start, got his second goal. And then Ayo Tanaka was able to claim the goal of a deflected shot from Matthias Zimmermann, his 6th goal of the campaign. 3 valuable points for Fortuna Düsseldorf, and heading into the weekend, they were 3rd until the result we'll talk about in Group 2. It's been a good run for Fortuna. They've got a lot to look forward to coming out of the international break. They've got their DFB Pokal semi-final against Bayer Leverkusen, along with what is going to be a very important run for them, because there's been times this season where it's been hard to really believe if they are a team that could make a run at promotion. They had a really sloppy start to January and February, but it seems like they're starting to pick it up again. And Daniel Thune has been very adaptable in the way he wanted to play. And you would make a good argument that you wouldn't expect them to give up as much possession as they did against a team like Osnabrück. But boy, when they got on the ball and they were going forward, they did make it count.
Yeah, I mean, Solis, he's probably the best player for counter-attacks in the complete league. So this is so impressive. And it's an easy way of play, but it's so good and so hard to defend. what he is doing, and he's so strong, always moves to the goal, always always looking forward to how to score. And I think Solis, he is one of the rising stars. We will see him in much better teams. And Fortuna Düsseldorf, as you say, they can adapt a lot. So Daniel Thune, the manager, he's I was always wondering, or I am always wondering, so for the first 6, 7, 8 teams, they have a really clear style of play, ideas of football. But for Fortuna Düsseldorf, I'm always struggling to say how they play. And this is because Daniel Thune, he wants his team to be, wants his team to play multiple variations of formations, tactical things. And and in total, you need to say Fortuna Düsseldorf is maybe short after HSV, maybe even before HSV, and they have the best squad. So the individual quality of this team is so high. So as you, Solis, player like Solis, he's much too good for the second league. Aotanaka is also much too good for the second league. And there you have a lot of more players there. And Fortuna Düsseldorf, they do games like this without having like 4 or 5 center backs in the squad because they are injured at the moment. So this is also quite impressive. And I, as you said, I also have expected them to come back after this really, really bad start in the second half of the season.
Yeah, you make a good point. They Tim Oberdorf and Jamil Siebert were the two center backs, with Andre Hoffman out along with Jordi De Vries. They're missing quite a lot of players. Kwashi is the other one who they had on loan, and a lot of these guys aren't coming back until the end of the international break. But yeah, you're very much on the money in the sense that I think what's probably surprising now as the season progresses, they've got some pretty interesting depth. Guys who have missed a lot of time this season, guys like Shinta Appelkamp, who for the last 18 months really hasn't had a particularly good run of it. And he's, you know, sort of been in many ways relegated to sort of playing the joker role. Vincent Vermey was the starting number 9 for the season, and he's also playing a part role as it does seem that's the one thing that Thune is tinkering the most with, is figuring out what a good number 9 fits in his system, because Vermey was very strong early in the season, tapered off throughout the Rückrunde. They brought in Christoph Daferne from Nürnberg on loan. He's not really got up and running. And so, you know, Marlon Mustafa comes in, and I guess this is the recency bias, but he was quite good in the system that they had built for the game. You know, he was quite dangerous. He had that chance in the first half, which was saved by Philipp Kühn. And maybe that's going to be the way forward, but definitely, you know, we know that they're, considering the spare parts that they've got, they're still a very strong defensive team, you know, equal second in the division, along with Wiesbaden and Holstein Kiel. But I guess the thing will be, can they continue their electric goal-scoring form? They are the top goal scorers of the division with 56 goals. I guess that will be the question going forward, because, you know, it is quite amazing that we've, and I would be guilty of this, if we've kind of slept on them as a team that has, you know, they've got some very nice players, but can they work cohesively? And, you know, you have to give Daniel Thune a lot of credit for being able to manage this team in such a way that they have such versatility, no matter who the opponent is.
Yeah, let's see. So, to be honest, as a St. Pauli fan, I'm hoping that Fortuna Düsseldorf, they can do a run for the third place.
I had an inkling that was going to come out eventually, but they've got Kaiserslautern away from home when they return. Osnabrück are there at Wiesbaden as they hope to somehow eat into that 9-point deficit that they have accumulated over the last couple of weeks. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we'll head to the Volksparkstadion in Hamburg. Welcome to VfL Wiesbaden. The temperature had been rising in Hamburg, much like in Adelaide. It's been bloody hot over the last few weeks. And, well, they needed to get back to winning ways. The gap between them and Kiel, and St. Pauli, more importantly, had grossly increased to a point where it didn't seem conceivable. Those teams behind, Fortuna Düsseldorf, Hanover, Paderborn, maybe Karlsruhe, were closing the gap at a rapid rate of knots, so they had to get back to winning ways. They welcomed a Wiesbaden side that are trying so ever hard to avoid being dragged into the bottom three. Entering the match day, they had a pretty comfortable gap, but at the end of match day 26, Wiesbaden's advantage to the bottom three was all but 3 points, three being the consistent number, as 3 points went to Haasvell with a score of 3-0. Your goal scorers being Miro Muheim, where his effort took a wicked deflection off captain Sascha Morkenhaupt, 1-0. Laszlo Benes with a very inventive free kick where he kicked it under the wall, very intentional, beats Florian Stritzel, and then Ransford Yeboah Konigsdorf for putting home Benes's excellent through ball to make it 3-0 HSV. A massive result for Hamburg, and it keeps them very much firmly entrenched in the hunt. They have the advantage after their two-game losing run. It was an important win for Hamburg. We know the stories, we know the pressure cooker that is HSV, as a very difficult place to coach, to play, especially when things are going south. But an important win, and they were pretty comprehensive against a Wiesbaden side that didn't really offer a lot of quality on match day 26.
Yes, so Robin Heuser, I think after 10 minutes, he had a top mm-hmm. chance to score, to go and to bring Wiesbaden in front. But so in the end, you need to be honest, you need to say, so HSV, they deserved it to win this game. And it's also so they are always putting so much effort in a match, and they need to put so much effort in the match. And they had struggles on the back, so on the right back position, Ludovic Reis was playing, and he was doing this quite good, especially against Wiesbaden, who are a team that is like standing deep, really deep, and then you need some kind of a player like Reis in the right back position is quite nice, because he is then able to bring a lot for the build-up play. And this looked quite good. I would say good is a bit too much. It's okay-ish. I mean, HSV, they are still... So Wiesbaden is not easy to play. St. Pauli knows it. They have played a draw in the last game before the winter break. And they are not easy to play. And HSV, they have done a good match, but you feel the tension here in Hamburg about this situation, and especially for fans of HSV, it's like the situation that St. Pauli is 10 in front now, 10 mm-hmm. points in front. They have been 13 in front before the match. They were, I mean, yeah. Everything is like falling together when they would have lost this, I suppose. I mean, this is like the start of Steffen Baumgart with one win and two losses. I mean, this is like really, really, really was really looking bad. And now let's see how they move on. I'm pretty excited that spring is coming for HSV, and most probably the same happens as the last years. But let's see. I think Steffen Baumgart, he needs to really crack something up, I think. So the team is like full of really of players who have really high individual quality, and they need to, Baumgart needs to crack them, I think. So they are full of... Yeah, I also don't know. I mean, if you... Maybe because you are a HSV player, maybe you, because you are wearing this jersey, you are getting worse in spring. I don't know. So this is, maybe the pressure there is totally different to other places there. And yeah, in the last years, the players and also the manager, they have shown that they cannot work with this type of pressure. And now it's again the same situation, even though the situation might be a bit different because they are now more like in the hunt and not those who are hunted.
Yeah, I mean, we did see pre-game the players and coaching staff head towards the main curva where one of the ultras gave a rather a stirring speech. We'll call it a stirring speech because it was intent to, you know, we've seen it throughout the season and it's quite common, and a lot of non-German based football fans mightn't understand what a big role the fanzines have within the football clubs. And I remember, was it when Darmstadt were beaten 6-0, and you know the ultras, couple of members of the main support came out and gave them a polite talking to. And yeah, look, you know, they needed the talking to, because the last two games were putrid, were not good enough, not to the standard expected. We saw some changes, like Levan Ustinali, who we haven't seen almost at all this season. It baffles me that I'm actually older than him. I've seen him play so long, but you know, he was inserted into the lineup. You know, they really just, yeah, it's going to be an interesting one throughout the season, and how they figure it out, how they come out of the international break is going to be massive, because they'll play Fürth side, who they probably wish they had played on the other side, this side of the international break. Given the way things are going there, we're going to talk about them next. You know, Wiesbaden have got Osnabrück. That's such a massive game. Then they've got Osnabrück as well. So, you know, when you think about their season in trying to avoid what has happened previously when they've been in the Zweite Bundesliga, they've got some massive games coming up. And I, you know, normally the cutoff point would be about 34 points, but I think this season, given how tight it is and the points accumulated, you're probably looking at like 40 points. 38 to 40 points is going to be enough to survive. And there are a lot of teams in that battle between 12 and 17, which is only separated by 4 points, that are going to be feeling really nervous about their situation. And some teams have experience of avoiding relegation from last season, and others have experienced relegation from whether it's the Bundesliga or the Zweite Bundesliga before. It's going to be an intense battle for the relegation spots. And we're going to start our chatter of teams that are entrenched in that battle with Hansa Rostock, because they welcomed Greuther Fürth to the Ostseestadion on Saturday afternoon. Fürth have been in absolutely miserable form, 4 defeats in their last 5 heading into this match day, and they didn't really help improve their situation. It's a 1-0 defeat in the end. Svante Ingelsson founding Nico Neidhard at the back post, completely unmarked. They had a graphic on Sports Show that was... I think it was Sports Show that it was about 4.5 meters of just nothing, nowhere near him. Neidhart with the easiest of tap-ins. Second half was a bit of a nothing burger. Sieb had a chance, and then Julian Green had a free kick at the end where he completely slipped over and it trickled to Marcus Kolkren. Symptomatic of where Fürth are at the moment. It's 5 defeats in their last 6, and even though they're now 6 points adrift of Hamburg, it does feel as if their chances of being in that battle are gone. And as much as they're one of the youngest teams squad-wise in the league, it's been a pretty difficult stretch for them to find solutions. And I think the one thing that's probably stood out over the last few weeks has been... Jesus, that was loud. The lack of defensive intensity has been quite noticeable. A very incohesive group. And I think the goal was a great example of how easily they were opened up, but the lack of tracking back to even man-mark Neidhart, which ultimately resulted in quite an easy tap-in.
Yeah, so really a good example. I mean, everyone who knows Fürth manager Alexander Sauniger, I think, would have been pretty sure that they don't want to be part of the squad at this moment after... getting this goal of Neidhart. I mean, I think it was Haddadi who was letting Neidhart go. And as you said, I think I've never seen a player with so much free space in the opponent's box. I mean, this was like, it's not discussable what happened there for Fürth. Yep. So it's there's a lack of everything there. So, and of course, the pass itself, it is possible that this happens, but to let him go, to let Neidhardt go. This is not acceptable, and I'm pretty sure that Alexander Zorniga, he's like I don't want to know what he has done in the last 48 hours.
I'm sure it was just a reasonable conversation. There was no angry yelling or screaming or, you know, broken doors or, I'm sure he's a reasonable guy who would have been calm in that situation. But I think the more important talking point is Hansa Rostock, because they win 2 on the bounce heading into the international break. And arguably one of the teams that almost the break hurts them in a way, because they've started to find a little bit of form. They get the win last week against Eintracht Braunschweig. And suddenly, and then look, this is a very reactive response to it, but suddenly there's a little bit more belief in the team. I mean, it wasn't exactly like they played a perfect game by any stretch of the imagination, but they were back to sort of it's almost Schwarz-esque football, in the sense that playing a lot more wider. They're getting a lot, you know, the quality of chances are quite high. I mean, the XG seems quite high for the shots on target, but, you know, they were able to get some really good efforts on goal. And especially in the first half, they played with an intensity that has so often been a non-factor for them throughout the season.
I mean, this is, I think, Mesut Zilimbegovic, he's like a really underrated coach. So an underrated manager, and he's able, what he has done with Regensburg, I think 2.5-3 years long, it was impressive, because the squad was not so good. They had Benedikt Gimba, who is now playing with Heidenheim in the Bundesliga, and Jan-Niklas Beste part-wise, yes, of course, they are good players, they have been good players. But what he achieved with Regensburg is, you can't call this high enough. Because it was really impressive, and he's like really playing pragmatic football. Like, he's looking at the squad also in Rostock and saying what can they do good, and is not focusing on how they want to play. He's focusing on how they can play the most successful football. And he was like, after the Kaiserslautern game, he was for himself, it was quite noticeable. He was like getting really emotional on the press conference before the match. He was like really saying, this is not enough from us and stuff like this. And this was like, I think I've never seen this kind of emotion from Mesut Zilimbegovic, but it worked out in the end. So they have won 2 in a row, and without these 6 points, they would have been gone already, I think.
Yeah, no, they would be in Osnabrück territory, and you would be saying, okay, we have a fair idea with 8 games to go who's going down. But now, and you look at the nest of teams that are in that sort of one game of each other, and they're very much in the game. Now, we know that their biggest issue has been scoring goals. We understand that has been a massive Achilles heel for them. But if you look at the teams around them in sort of a defensive aspect, they're better defensively than Kaiserslautern. They are streets better than Schalke, better than Osnabrück. Only Wiesbaden in that nest of teams and Braunschweig have a better defensive record. So, like, we understand what their issues are, and this was the same issue they had last season, which is they didn't score it. They scored enough goals to stay up, but, you know, if you put it in a rankings, they were equal bottom. So that's going to be really the key for them. Look, they're winning games 1-0, and ultimately, in this business, points accumulation is your best friend. And for Mesut Zilimbegovic to keep yourself in a job, like any manager, you've got to win games. And, you know, the pressure is always going to be intense, especially coming in during the middle of a season, and understanding that you are working with a lot of the players from the previous management system, or in some cases, managers, given Rostock's predicament from last season as well. So, you know, he's done. Look, as you mentioned, very pragmatic. They will take the 1-0 wins every day of the week. You won't hear a manager say no to a clean sheet. But can they continue this momentum out of the international break? Because Holstein Kiel is their next opponent. That is not exactly an easy game for them. And yeah, that'll be a really good test for them. For Fürth, they've got Hamburg at home. Yeah, look, there's going to be some cheerleading from several teams, I can imagine. But they really need to figure it out structurally, what they're going to do to fix this defense, because they've had some pretty shambolic performances, and none more so than the game against Karlsruhe. But this was equally one that they could have got a result here, but yeah, they were almost willing to part ways with the 3 points, and Hansa Rostock were more than happy to take them. Our last game of Group 2 brings us to Paderborn. FC Paderborn Nord Sieben hosted Eintracht Braunschweig, and well, there was some real squandering of points here from the hosts, who would go on to lose this game 1-2. A massive win for Braunschweig, who opened the scoring on 59 minutes thanks to a penalty against Kai Clayfish for handling the ball from a set piece. Hassan Kurace, who took the free kick, took the penalty and scored his second goal. Both of his goals have come from the spot. A quick change from Lucas Kwasniok saw Adriano Grimaldi come on, and within a trice he scored thanks to a horrible pass from Robin Kraus, who went the old no-look to nowhere in particular. And Grimaldi, who's not exactly streaking with pace, did enough to beat Ron Torben Hoffman. As the game progressed, it did seem like Paderborn had the best opportunities to win this game. They hit the crossbar. They forced several quality saves from Hoffman. But it would be Ryan Philippe with his fifth goal of the season to give Braunschweig a vital 3 points. And when you add to the fact that Rostock won on the weekend, those points are massive. It keeps them very much in the hunt. And, you know, last week, the sort of the mode was, this team's got no, they've got no plan B. There's some concerns. And those concerns are still very valid. But at the end of the day, a massive 3 points for Braunschweig, especially given what's happened above them, and it very much keeps them in with a chance of avoiding relegation.
Yeah, the interesting thing for Braunschweig is that Daniel Schanning, the manager, he started quite good. They had a really a good period. Then they were losing at St. Pauli. And then afterwards, it was getting a bit, how to say, critical. But Daniel Schanning, at this time, after losing to St. Pauli, he extended his contract. And afterwards, it seemed like, okay, now it's getting critical. Is there a connection between extending the contract and the match itself? But now Braunschweig returned, even though, as you said it, Paderborn, they need to score the second goal. I mean, they were so dominant. They had so high quality chances. They simply need to score the second goal. And then, yeah, of course, it's getting critical again for Braunschweig.
Yeah, it seemed the easier thing to do for Paderborn was to win the game. And, you know, Braunschweig weren't, like, doing anything, doing a whole lot of much in that late stage. It just seemed as if they were the sponge. They absorbed an immense amount of pressure. And even after the second goal, Paderborn were throwing the kitchen sink with opportunities. And, yeah, look, you know, Braunschweig brought a pretty heavy contingency to the Homes Deluxe Arena, not exactly the biggest stadium in the Zweite Bundesliga by any stretch of the imagination, but they would have left feeling quite, I don't know, like happy they won, but it sort of masks over the issues that this team has, which is they want to be a very heavy counter-attacking team, but the only way you can really, you know, inflict strong counter-attacking principles is with an advantage. Or if a team is playing the way Paderborn like to play, which is heavy possession and you know, dynamic balls into the box. And it's just, yeah, look, we have to wait and see. I think, you know, it's a massive win for them. And I think that, you know, Philippe has been one of their rising stars for the season, considering he couldn't get on the pitch for the Jens Hertel spell at the club, which I know many fans are still not fond of, but because he's got good pace, and you know, the finish was a good finish, because you look at the amount of Paderborn players that were crowding that 6 yard box to squeeze the ball past, you know, shows the ticker that he's got. But in this relegation battle, because we've got to talk about Schalke in the next group in particular as another team that are in this dogfight along with Magdeburg. Does this help Braunschweig in the long run? Because, look, they've got some pretty tough games coming up with Elversberg, Fortuna Düsseldorf, and, of course, the Niedersachsen derby against Hannover. can they find a way out of the bottom three, or do you feel, you know, with eight games remaining, that they are pushing the proverbial uphill?
I think they can, not only because they are like they are getting the points, but I think the problem is more for other teams that they are getting, how to say, getting down at the moment, and even they thought that they are already secured. I think this is in the last phase of the season always a problem, that you have teams who know we are in the relegation battle, and they know it since week one, like Braunschweig.
Yeah.
And there are other teams that are saying, okay, we want to play like this, we want to develop some things, looking forward for next season, maybe want to earn as soon as possible 40 points to stay secure. And now they realize, okay, it's getting critical for us. And those teams, they have, how to say, problems to adapt to this situation. And I think this is a huge benefit for Braunschweig, that and for Rostock also, that they know since a long time that they will be in the relegation battle and others don't.
Yeah, and the psychology behind that is the pressure's not on them, really. Obviously, the danger looms of relegation, but the pressure's on teams like Schalke, Kaiserslautern, you know, the pressure is heavily on those teams heading into the final push of the season. And, you know, as you know, when we spoke on match day 11, we were ready to read the rights for Braunschweig as a team that we were there. You know, we were at the point where, you know, we were a signature away from signing the third division license for them. But like, they've overcome quite a lot with Daniel Schoening, who, funnily enough, has won more games than he did with Bielefeld last season. 7 wins from 14 matches. And he's, in terms of like his as a manager in like top tier football, you know, he's almost equaled. He's 0.01 off the beating his best points per match, which was with Osnabrück at 1.58. But let's see if he can continue that. Big games coming up for Braunschweig, along with Paderborn. Paderborn are at St. Pauli when they return. And yeah, like, they're still in the hunt. But yeah, they could have been fifth and much closer to Dusseldorf and Hamburg had they got a result on the weekend. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss the final three games starting at the Olympiastadion when Hertha hosted Schalke. This time, 12 months ago, both of these sides were almost resigned to the fact that they'd be playing Zweite Bundesliga football next season. Fast forward the clocks to the present day, one team is edging closer to surviving for another season and staying in the Zweite Bundesliga. The other one's place in the division is looking more and more precarious. And that particular team didn't really do themselves any sorts of favours heading exiting match day 26. I'm, of course, talking about Hertha and Schalke. And if you know that one thing that's really bad about Schalke is that the black kits they keep wearing are for their away games, because obviously lots of teams wear blue and they don't want to wear the white. Well, let's just put it this way. They should stop wearing the black kits altogether because they don't seem to win in them. And this was no different here. A 5-2 defeat at Hertha, just another defensive calamity on the road. Braces for Haris Tabakovic and Martin Winkler. Florian Niederlechner came off the bench for his goal. He's seventh of the season. Tabakovic, by the way, has got 15. So he's edging ever closer to Robert Glatzel, who still leads the top scorers list for now. Simon Terodde scored a brace, and I think symptomatic of where the team is at the moment, not much celebration. It was very subdued, and yeah, it was pretty sad, but unfortunately that's where the team is at. And there was not a lot of positives to say about Schalke's performance there. The two goals came from fumbles from, you know, or poor saves from Marius Gersbeck. And yeah, I've got it in my notes. They were scared, timid, and defensively incapable. We've known they've been defensively incapable for the last, you know, more than 18 months. And yeah, look, whatever Hertha wanted in this game, they were able to get it.
So the interesting thing is that, so I, as a neutral spectator, it was like, highly entertaining, especially the first half. But they haven't, both sides haven't played with, like, with a defense on the pitch. It was like, this was like for two teams that were coming down from the Bundesliga, this was, to be honest, unacceptable to play like this kind of football. And interesting thing, because I was also wondering that there was no, when Simon Terodde, when he scored, he was quite calm. Yeah. So is there anything happening within the squad, or what's going on there?
It seems like, and look, there were reports that came out a few weeks ago that, if you look at the timeline of the season, it seems that it doesn't matter who's the coach, really, because it seems like the players do whatever they want. Now, this is only speculation, but you look at what they did on the weekend and you look at what they've done throughout the course of the season, and it's really difficult to figure out what this team wants to do in terms of footballing philosophy or identity. And when things turn to crap, because we can say crap on the air, that's sort of like the first place you look to is the coach. And I don't think anyone can help this situation. They talked about it the start of March, that there's going to be like this massive clean out of players, and that's all well and good, but you've got to survive first. You're only 2 points above Rostock in 16th. Like, sure, the home form's been acceptable to an extent, but what they produce away from home is just tragic. Like, they don't care. I don't know. It just, you know, as a fan, it's hard to watch, because you every club goes through this, where you, as a fan, you want them to feel the same way about the club as you do. And look, I get it's a job for them, but, you know, you get paid quite well to do what you love doing, which is playing football. And it just doesn't seem like it's an environment that loves what they do. They're just kind of there. You know, look, I get to play at all these awesome stadiums, great atmospheres, and yeah. And look, this is very reactionary, because every week it seems like the line you take about talking about Schalke is different, because there'll be times where they look like a team that really cares, and it's all, you know, fiery mentality and crunching into duels and doing the basics. And then you have games like on the weekend where, you know, they were already on the international break, a lot of them. And it just, I don't know if there's going to be a change. I just don't have that information. And who knows, at the time this comes out, maybe there is some change. But, you know, Carol Gerrits has what seems to be a pretty uphill challenge, regardless of because what team he has, because I don't think this team that he's inherited is exactly what he needs to play his football. And as much as he's tried really hard to adapt to what he's got, it doesn't really seem to work, regardless. You know, they've shown glimpses that they could work. The St. Pauli game was a great example of that. But those kinds of performances have been so few and far between. And it's difficult. It's difficult to watch, like, willingly, you know, sitting down and seeing what they want to do. And the first thing you think of is like, okay, you've got Matriciani, like, and I'm not isolating him, but you've got Matriciani, you have Merkin, and any decent wide player will just go at him. Look at Fabian Riza. He cooked Matriciani for the second goal. Dudziak absolutely did him for the first goal. And look, that's not, I get Matriciani's not a particularly strong defender. It's not what he's there to do. But there's just no cohesion. I don't know. I don't know the best way to describe it, but it just, the impression I get is that they don't care. And they sort of pick and choose when they feel like they want to be invested. And I know that's a really difficult thing to say, but I can only, the eye test doesn't deny it. Like, another game where they conceded three or more goals. You know, and that's not to say Hertha are a pretty decent offensive team in their own right. But, like, you know what they're trying. I feel like they didn't either read the scouting report. Stop Fabian Riza. Stop him. Yes. And you're a good way of getting something from the game. What do they do? Let him do whatever the hell he wants. And he just torched them. He was having a ball. And, you know, like, oh, it's just maddening because the pressure was also on Hertha as well. And there was the reports coming out before the game that, you know, maybe this is Pal Dardai's swan song and they're looking to maybe go in a different direction. So, I don't know, maybe it's catch 22. Maybe they've got to do another year of Dardai. But what was your, like, impression of, like, the Schalke thing? Because it just doesn't... Yeah, I it's obviously hard as someone who supports the club, but, like, as a neutral, you can probably step away and see what it is. But it's just really hard to, like, you know, turn... Like, we've seen it throughout the season. Like, the fans have turned on the team when they think they've played poorly, and this would have been another fair example to do so.
So, I think over the course of the season, Schalke especially have a problem on the right back position. Mm. I think Cedric Brunner, he was having a hard time in Magdeburg a few weeks ago. And then it was, who was playing against St. Pauli? Soppy?
Soppy, and he was good. He was fine, but he's not match fit. Yeah. He can't play 60 minutes, and that's it.
Okay. Yeah. So, this is a complete mismatch, of course. Fabian Riese is a mismatch himself in person for almost the complete Zweite Bundesliga. Mm. But a good example of how to play against Riese has given FC St. Pauli the week before, because they has, how to say, used the strength of Fabian Riese as a weapon against Hertha, because they were just purely, after winning the ball, looking for the space in the back of Riese.
Yeah.
And this was, like, quite impressive. And as you said, maybe at Schalke they haven't read the scouting report because they haven't done this. And especially they left Matrigiani most of the time alone with Fabian Riese. And this is always a mistake. So, I'm wondering. So, this team, as you said, maybe they seem to be some kind of... lacking of motivation if a match is not running as it is planned. So they can't play quite well because they have the quality, the individual quality. But if some, the circumstances are forcing them to do, to get out of their comfort zone, I call it like this, then it's getting really critical for Schalke.
Yeah.
So, and I'm wondering, so this was what... when I said that there are teams in the league who are not expecting to be in the relegation battle, who were planning to be somewhere else at this part of the season, in this moment, I meant Schalke.
Yeah.
Because so now the important question is the squad able to fight a relegation battle? And I doubt it, really.
Yeah.
Because it's after a match against Hertha, this match, and they have known Braunschweig, they have won Hansa Rostock, they have won also. I mean, they knew how important this is. And then they present themselves like this in Berlin. Of course, Hertha, they have a really strong offense, I think.
Yeah.
But they have really bad defense. And for Schalke, it's almost the same, but they... So yeah, it's really hard, and it's tough to foresee what will happen or will happen over the next weeks with Schalke. So I get Arminia Bielefeld vibes here in this case.
Yeah, no, very similar. Yeah, I agree. This team's not built, and look, they can't keep relying on Keenan Karaman. It came out that he's been playing with injury for a good chunk of the Rückrunde, and look, he fronts up again. But yeah, he can't do it on his own. Neither can Marius Müller, for that matter. You know, it wasn't his best game, admittedly, but you know, he's been one of less than a handful who can really say that they've given everything throughout the season. And you don't want to question someone's, motivations. But yeah, there's been those who have been up for it, only a few. Who've been up for it, and the rest haven't. We could go on for this for hours, but I don't think anyone wants to hear a 15-hour monologue on why this is turning into absolute garbage. They've got Karlsruhe on the way out, then Hanover, and then Nürnberg. Maybe at that game, we'll see. Hertha have got.
I mean, they have Karlsruhe. I mean, this is the worst situation you can have. now. I mean, and this is they have Karlsruhe, and then afterwards Hanover.
Hanover. Yeah.
Oh man, this is such a bad situation for Schalke. This is so hard.
It's grim. It is grim. Hertha have got Nürnberg, then Paderborn, and then Hans. That Nürnberg game is a world feed game for Hertha. Now let's head to the Heinz von Harden Arena, Hanover against Kaiserslautern. Celebration was in the air as Hanover celebrated 70 years from when they won the German championship, ironically beating their opponents, Fritz Walter's Kaiserslautern. They had a nice little dark green Sondertroikert, which with the nice logo and the sort of retro font. Surprised that Ron Robert-Zieler was wearing the whites with the black shorts. So thought he might have gone the all-black attire. But anyway, it all looked very nice. Macron did quite a nice job with the kids. Important game for Kaiserslautern as well. They want to get out of the relegations that fight. They've won two on the bounce heading into this one. And they took the lead just after half-time with a great finish from Kenny Prince-Redondo. However, the lead was fleeting when Andreas Vogelsammer, who's been in real goal-scoring form, he got the start in this one, and he finished an excellent cross. Oh, it was a sumptuous ball in from Sebastian Ernst. Julian Kral was outstretched to try and punch. He missed. Vogelsammer didn't, and his sixth goal of the campaign. 1-1 your final from this game, and look, a point's a point for Kaiserslautern. They'll take it any which way. They obviously would have loved to have won, and had they done so, they would have put themselves, they would have kept the gap to Hansa Rostock and the bottom two, or the chasing two, we should say. But I guess there's a lot to draw from this game. The big one for them is losing Ragnar Ache with what looks like a hamstring injury, which is typically a 4 to 6 weeker, and look, that's a massive loss for them. You know, he's their top scorer with 14 goals this season. They're another team that you got to have the question mark of do they have really enough to fight the fight? Because when we've seen Kaiserslautern without Ragnar Ache, they have been just really, they've really struggled to make an impression. And it did seem that they lost a little bit of belief when he came off the pitch.
So I think they are better in the second half of the season without Ache, because they in the winter break they have a lot of players for the offensive line were coming to the team.
Yep.
And of course I'm a fan of Friedhelm Funkel, and I think he is able to give the team what they need, also some kind of energy, like some kind of motivation, some kind of the things that Schalke is lacking of are there at Kaiserslautern. And you see it for each match, even though they are lacking of defending quality, they are always like putting everything on the pitch they have, I think. So you get in the impression that Kaiserslautern, they really fight for their chance to stay in the league. They accepted that they started into the season with the idea of, oh, maybe this year we have this chance to get promoted. And then you're getting worse. It's getting worse and worse. And after the first games of after winter break with Gramotzes, you've seen, okay, now it's getting critical to stay in the league, but not because we're going up. It's possible that we go down. Mm. And then they had this time to adapt to this and use this time to adapt to this. And I think this is this is because of Friedhelm Funkel, who is there, who knows the situation, and to get this, to have such an experienced manager on the sideline is quite helpful. And I'm always wondering, so everyone is saying like, okay, you need the people who have the experience there and relegation battle and blah, blah. And I'm always wondering, but maybe it's exactly this, that you need to know what to do, that you need to, keep calm, that you need to come over emotions, whatever. But it seems to work, even though it was a draw against Hannover. I mean, Hannover, they are not bad at all. Mm. They have won the two games before, and they are looking quite good. So to me, Kaiserslautern is, from those teams in the relegation battle, is the best. And I'm expecting them definitely to be, how to say, secured even a few games before the end of the season.
It will be interesting to see who starts the next game. They do have Filip Stojukovic, who they brought over from Darmstadt during the winter. But look, you know, I think Funkel's sort of willingness to just find... I think a lot of people were surprised he didn't start Simakala, who was really good in the game against Osnabrück, and he scored that unbelievable goal, which had me completely gushing last week. And they were obviously very busy, as you mentioned. They also brought in Dixon Abiyama as well from Greuther Fürth to tie him over to the end of the season. They've got a lot of versatility up the front end, so it'll be interesting to see what sort of a look they provide against Fortuna Düsseldorf. But we've also got to remember they've got a DFB Pokal semi-final against Saarbrücken. This podcast in particular is manifesting Fortuna Düsseldorf against Kaiserslautern. Very good for the brand, but we'll see if that happens or not. But hey, man can dream. So, it'll be interesting to see how that gets on. Hanover, look, I guess in a way it's a missed opportunity, because they would have felt that they could have... they're still in the hunt, don't get me wrong, but they've got a pretty critical, an important month coming up. You know, Magdeburg, Schalke, then Braunschweig is the next three. If they can pick some results, you know, it keeps them in the hunt. Like, the talk was for them to be... It's a three-year project. We're in year two. They've obviously showed a lot of growth and development, but we'll see if they can actually close the gap as the season progresses. And lastly, let's head to Karlsruhe. We were saving this one till last, or to be honest, we didn't. I had no idea what the score was going to be when I did the run sheet. This game just happened to be to plumb last, but I don't think anybody could have foreseen this kind of scoreline. For the second time this season, we have seen a 7-0 game. This has just been an unbelievable result. Karlsruhe 7, Magdeburg 0. Goals for Marcel Franke, a brace for Budo Zivzivadze, Paul Niebel with a goal, Marcel Beifuss with a goal, Igor Matanovic, there's a theme here, and a penalty scored by Marvin Vanitsek. And, I think we should talk about Magdeburg first, because, oh Lord, what a defensive calamity this was. And it was self-inflicted, because if you look at several of the goals, especially in the first half, goals 2 and 3 for Zivzivadze, they were pressed into trouble, turnover, goal. It's like when you play EAFC or eFootball on the easiest difficulty and you watch the AI just hold the ball and you just pick it off them and shoot and score. We saw that in real time, and it was such a mind-boggling display of we know that they want to be aggressive, Magdeburg, but they almost needed to simplify it a bit, because they got themselves in all sorts of trouble and Karlsruhe were in the goal-scoring mood.
Yeah, I mean, so for Magdeburg, it's also an interesting, phase of the season now that they are heading towards, because they want to play dominant, ball dominant. They want to have the ball. They want to also play brave. And this is what they did. Also against Karlsruhe, and they lost it. They had three situations. You said the second and the third goal. I think the sixth goal was also when Jamie Lawrence, he was in the game, and he also lost the ball short before their own box. And the question is how it works now with just 31 points, having just 31 points and looking and seeing that they are just 4 points away from place 17. Do they still play this kind of ball-dominant football? I mean, they're always playing with a high risk. I mean, Magdeburg, they've lost 7-0 today. They have won against Hertha 6-4, and I think these two matches, they show what Magdeburg can do. They can do it in both directions. So their style of play is it's quite easy for them to to concede a lot of goals, but also to score a lot of goals. And the interesting thing is that Magdeburg is having a playing style that is quite similar to FC St. Pauli. Mm. But St. Pauli is the best defense in the league, and Magdeburg is, I don't know, the worst. I haven't looked it up, but...
sort of like mid-table, but yeah. I mean, actually, defensively, it significantly improved. They'd only had 34 goals conceded heading into the match day, which was... should have been at the top, but yeah, they gave up 7 goals on the weekend, so that kind of put a massive dent. So they're kind of like in that mid tier, but they're still we know the problems still exist, and yeah, they manifested in quite a big way on the weekend.
Yeah, and they need to. So they had good parts of the season, but in this part and these parts they haven't got the points they needed to get out of this situation, to play a season without being scared of getting relegated. I mean, this is exactly now. So again, like Schalke, maybe in a different way, but Magdeburg is also getting digged down at the moment, and they haven't expected to get into this for most parts of the season, I think.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's kind of an interesting one with them. Like, it always feels like they're on the edge of doing something crazy. Yeah, look, this was a great example. Like, they were, all of these, a good chunk of the goals, I'd say 4 of them were self-inflicted. You know, the penalty was also Lawrence with the handball, and the first goal was a set piece, the fourth goal was a great pass and a great finish, goal 5 was Jensen off the crossbar and Bifuss heading on. Look, Karlsruhe were great. To be presented with so many free opportunities, they made the most of them. They are very much on the outside looking in. You know, they are 6 points adrift of Hamburg, but you know, they've won 3 of their last 4 games. They've got some pretty big games coming up with Schalke, then they've got St. Pauli at home, and then Paderborn. So it's going to be interesting. I think they're a team that can cause some headaches down the stretch, and who knows, maybe they might stun a few people along the way. Magdeburg have got Hanover, then Elversberg, then Hamburg. So it'll be interesting to see if they can rebound from that. That's it for another episode of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Tim, thank you so much for coming on once again to talk about all things St. Pauli and, of course, the Zweite Bundesliga.
Yes, thanks for inviting me. Hopefully, this was the last time that I be part of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast, because FC St. Pauli is playing Bundesliga next season.
It's a funny man. No, and they say Germans don't have humor, but we'll see if that is coming true. They look very, very good. Enjoy the international break, everyone. We'll be back in a few weeks' time to discuss all of the action from match day 27. And I may or may not be somewhere that I'm not normally am. So that will be interesting. Enjoy the time off, and we'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.